You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The narrator of the new novel from Steve Healy is Pete Tarslaw, a slacker and literary opportunist who sets out to write a bestseller. His motivation is to upstage his college girlfriend, the love of his life, who's marrying someone else. He'd also like to have enough fame to meet other women, plus the kind of financial comfort that will allow him to spend his life pursuing hobbies like boating or skeet shooting at a stately home by the ocean or a scenic lake. But he doesn't have much time. Steve Healy's novel, How I Became a Famous Novelist, is published by Black Cat, which is an imprint of Grove Press. I'm very pleased that it brings him to our show today. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
And we're speaking to you from the set of 30 Rock, so couldn't you have written a memoir called How I Became a Famous TV Writer?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think TV writers are too famous, mostly. The credit goes to the actors, and richly deserved. No, it's only in books that you can become super famous as a writer.
Well, you have written for David Letterman, and you probably saw a number of people who were kind of like Pete Tarslaw as guests on that show.
Well, yeah, you do wonder about some of these people, how they're how they got to where they are, how they achieved their particular celebrity, and what their motives were. And hopefully you don't wonder too much, because you'd rather just enjoy their performances.
Well, this is your second novel, isn't it? The first one co-written?
The first one was a travelogue. It was a true story about a friend of mine and I who had a race around the world in opposite directions without using airplanes. It was called The Ridiculous Race, and this other guy and I came up with this idea that we would have this race. I would go west and he would go east, and whoever got all the way around the world and back to Los Angeles faster would win a bottle of expensive scotch. So that was my first book. It was called The Ridiculous Race, and I wrote it with a guy named Vali Chandrasekaran, who is a television writer here on 30 Rock with me, actually.
Well, even though you're making fun of Pete, to some degree the things that motivate him, the things he wants to achieve with his writing, are not all that different from what a lot of other writers have wanted.
No, I think it's the fantasy of everybody who sets out to write a book, that you have this idea that being a writer is this great, relaxing life where you can just sit around, take your shoes off, and live in a nice country place. And when you read interviews with writers, I'm always just longing for their awesome lakeside homes and quiet lives of contemplation, although unfortunately I think the track record of actual authors is also one of horrible alcoholism and craziness and general debauchery.
Although many of them, the very nice ones, spend a lot of their time at universities trying to make a living, because books don't sell all that well unless you reach the elite top.
Exactly, unless you reach the Leonard Lopate listeners. But yeah, Pete Tarslaw does talk about the idea of just getting a sweet teaching job at a university where he can just engage in sexual hijinks.
Before he sets out to write a novel, he's writing fiction of another sort for Essay Aids.
Right, that's right. He's writing college essays for he works at a service that you people pay them to write your college or grad school applications for them. And he finds this a little bit morally repugnant, but not enough to do anything about it.
He says that students would send you something for their college essays about how Anchorman or the golf team had changed their lives. And he says, I'd change Will Ferrell to Toni Morrison and golf to learning woodworking from a Darfur refugee.
Good advice for anyone working on your college essay out there.
He's also obsessed with ancient Rome. But when he decides to write a famous novel, he attends a workshop at St. Joseph's School. Did you ever attend a writing class like the one you described?
No, I never did, although I was always curious about them. You know, you hear about these writing classes and workshops. I went to a couple writing classes in college, which were very helpful. I mean, one was helpful because the teacher gave me a lot of encouragement, and one was helpful because the teacher did the exact opposite and told me how bad my stuff was, which are both things that a budding writer needs to hear. You need to get it from both ends.
Well, what Pete realizes is that his teacher does not write all that well when she reads from her own work, and I suspect that's happened quite a bit, people taking a course and then realizing that they're learning from somebody who's not particularly good.
Right, exactly. That must be a strange phenomenon. I mean, it's a hard thing to teach, to teach someone to write in their own voice and to be original. I'm not sure how you go about telling someone how to do it, except giving them time and confidence and getting them to work.
After you have an outline for Pete's constructed bestseller by the numbers novel, he's called the Tornado Ashes Club, and the title is really important too, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the title is how you got to leap out there. I mean, he goes about studying this and figures out that, you know, people love natural disasters and they love clubs, because readers are all sort of in, you know, he realizes that the book club audience is a big part of his base, and also that readers that aren't in book clubs are sort of lonely and wish they were in a cool club. So that's part of his plan in coming up with the title, The Tornado Ashes Club.
And the outline is, after a murder at the Las Vegas hotel where he works.
Oh, you've got to have a murder in your book. That's if you make a study of the bestseller list.
And then you have Silas Quilter. The name is important, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. He picks that name, I think, off a, if I remember right, he picks it off a name of some other books he sees at the bookstore.
He's accused of a crime he didn't commit and forced to turn to the only person he has left, his grandmother. She makes him a bargain. She'll help him stay ahead of the law if he'll help her on a mysterious mission to bring a soul to the afterlife.
You need to have mysterious missions in your books. That's another thing he discovers as he's making a study of the bestseller list.
And the novel also comes with questions for reading clubs. By the way, I suspect that even though you have invented this, that this is not all that odd, that there are any number of people who have actually come up with similar approaches.
Well, I wonder about that. You know, you do wonder, and there are sort of like guides for writing things like by a formula. And you know, you wonder about whether people, what people's motives are in writing these books, whether it's possible to come up with an idea that you think will sell a lot of copies, or whether you just can sort of do it. It's just what you enjoy writing and what you would write anyway. I mean, it seems to me that your truly successful writers are probably just doing what they would do anyway. You know, they're basically, I mean, Stephen King has talked about this. You know, he's basically just half the time he's just transcribing some weird nightmare he had. So I'm not sure how much audience manipulation you can do.
But
that's part of the question I wanted to get at in this book.
But Pete's rules include: write a popular book, do not waste time writing a good book. At dull points, include descriptions of delicious meals, include plant names. These are all things that will get you more readers.
Well, that's what he determines in his studies of bestseller lists, and I would agree. I would agree that those seem to be common trends in popular books.
Did you consult the New York Times bestseller list?
Oh, I absolutely did. I made a study of it, and I went down to Barnes & Noble and looked at what books were selling, what were popular, and these are common tropes that you find in best-selling books.
It does seem that you are, I'm not sure whether you want to say the word, mocking these people, and you seem to have be resisting talking about some of the people that you may have imitated in this book, but I'm going to throw out some names: Tom Clancy, Dan Brown, James Patterson, Patricia Cornwell.
If you like any of those people's books, you will love this book.
Your bestseller, the bestsellers on the list are pretty funny too. Mind Stretch by Pamela McLaughlin. Trang Martinez suspects her Pilates instructor may also be a vicious serial killer. That's the number one bestseller.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I could, I mean, when I was writing this book, I was thinking that if I just sat down, I mean, I had a lot of these ideas, and sometimes I wish I'd just written one of these books instead of writing this complicated parody that includes lots of other best-selling books. I sometimes do wish I'd just gone for the bestseller.
When Pete first gets a meeting with a publisher, Lucy, his friend, tells him he has to insist that the meeting take place in Brooklyn. Is that the thing now?
I would think that, I mean, what she's doing there is that she figures her editor will find him to be a more serious and respectable novelist if he lives in Brooklyn. And he's not from New York. He has no idea where he's going or what he's doing. But that's just part of her scheme to trick her editor, who's a terrified person and has no idea what he's supposed to be buying and can't figure out how to follow the public's weird reading trends.
Well, most of the best writers these days do live in Brooklyn.
It seems like it. It seems like a good place for him. I'm glad that we have them all in one tidy borough so we can keep track of them.
But Pete goes off to a cabin to write. Do all writers have to write in remote locations?
I think so. I mean, it certainly seems like part of the writing lifestyle is getting out to some weird rural place. Although, of course, what he's trying to do is fool people into thinking that this is really what he's doing. I didn't write in a cabin. I just wrote in my apartment, but I often longed for like a nice little like fishing shack or something.
Well, when you were writing this, was it all that different than writing for TV, for writing for 30 Rock, for example?
Yeah, it's a lot different. I mean, writing on TV shows is very collaborative. You sit in a big giant room and you're all working on the stories together and coming up with the ideas together. And writing a book, you're sitting there alone, you don't have anyone to talk to about it. It can get pretty crazy. I mean, I've never been to visit William Faulkner's house in Mississippi, but I'm told that like all over the walls he just had written out outlines and stuff. That's when you're starting to lose your mind a little bit, because you don't have anyone to work these stories through, and you don't have an audience that you're getting constant response from. And that was some of the fun of this book is, you know, people write these books and they put them out and there are hundreds and hundreds of books coming out all the time. And, you know, the authors are not getting feedback and the relationship of readers and authors is a really strange one. You know, you start to wonder about these people that have touched you so deeply in a really great book, but you have no idea what their life is like. And you know, there's that line in Catcher in the Rye about how Holden Caulfield says when he reads a really great book, he just wants to call the author up. But
J.D. Salinger doesn't want you to call him.
That's
up.
Right, exactly. He's the least call-upable guy in America. So it's a strange relationship you form, kind of like weird connection that you can't make any deeper.
Well, you pretty much go after anyone who's connected with books in this book, writers, writing teachers, literary agents, publishers, critics, book buyers.
Well, I mean, hopefully it's all affectionate because, I mean, I do love books and I'm the sort of dude, old-fashioned dude who's still writing a book instead of, writing Twitter updates or whatever I should be doing in this new media world. So I do have a lot of affection for this world, and I think probably the best comedy comes from that affection.
Do you also have a lot of affection for Pete Tarzla? Because you don't seem to be willing to give him up. You're maintaining a blog in his name, aren't you?
Yeah, you can check that out. I think you know, you have to have affection for someone who is, so unabashed about their own scheming. That always, to me, is a kind of funny kind of comedy character, someone who's just totally embraced their own cynical nature and is sort of putting it all out there for you.
Well, the blog is called End of Books, and you make fun of all of these people who say that publishing is dying or dead.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was trying to write, again, in Pete's you get into this complicated and strange world because I'm trying to write in Pete's voice where he's faking people out with this fake earnestness. But then, of course, he's trying to pretend to be this great author, but of course he knows he's just a fraud. And the story of the book is the story of how that fraud comes apart and what it does to you to try and maintain this illusion when it's not really who you are.
Well, is Pete already planning for the books in the future to be published in Kindle?
Unfortunately, I think the book is already out there in Kindle, and hopefully people can get it and download it and read it on their strange Kindle devices if they find that a better way to read than the old-fashioned way.
Meanwhile, I have this in old-fashioned book form here from Black Cat, which is a paperback original imprint of Grove Atlantic. Steve Healy was a writer for The Late Show with David Letterman and for the Fox animated comedy American Dad. These days he's writing for 30 Rock, and you're shooting right now?
No, we're about to start shooting. We're working on episodes right now. We're actually on our lunch break, which is always the best part of every writer's day and an important part of the writing schedule.
And we have this book, How I Became a Famous Novelist. Thank you so much, Steve, for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
I forgot to mention that the book also has theme music, as books should have. In this case, ranchera music.
Virgencita mexicana, hoy que es día de tu santo, mil canciones te cantamos. Otra vez vengo de nuevo.